I walked into the Oval to hear Karen complaining about Ari to the president in front of Condi. Ari was forced to issue a retraction later that day. But, as I gradually came to understand, more troubling than the press secretary's access limitations was the overall mindset of secrecy within the administration, its negative attitude toward the national media, and the limited support given to the press secretary as a result of such thinking. For example, the president liked to compartmentalize information within the White House. There were regular meetings between the president and the vice president, or Andy Card, or Karl Rove, that were strictly private. That was understandable. When a president and his closest advisors meet, they want to be able to speak with utmost freedom and frankness. And any third party, even a trusted member of the team, might limit that freedom. But in the Bush White House, that closed door was a little troubling. Cheney had greater power and influence than any other vice president in history, and no one really knew how extensively he wielded it. Being shut out from his thinking and from the ways he advised the president left a large black hole in my understanding of what was really going on inside the administration. The same thing happened when I wasn't filled in on some relevant decision-making that had occurred in a private one-on-one or small group setting, and being kept in the dark is an uncomfortable position for any press secretary to be in. More broadly, I had a sense that the Bush administration gave minimal support to the role of press secretary. Few among the president's top policy advisors took a proactive stance when it came to keeping the press secretary informed about behind-the-scenes policy changes and the reasons behind them. Worse still, at times, even after the press secretary got wind of an important development, getting details about it from some key advisors involved a game of 20 questions. No one charged with keeping the press and the public informed about the workings of the government should have to play such frustrating games. Ari's frustration over the difficulty of getting information was part of the reason he'd burned out sooner than I anticipated. The job of press secretary, like other White House positions, is incredibly demanding and time-consuming. There are plenty of challenges to deal with on any given day, without having to spend an inordinate amount of time trying to stay on top of things or play catch-up when the clock is ticking and a live session on camera with the press corps is just moments away. And no press secretary should have to worry about getting blindsided by the press finding out what has happened inside the White House before he does. Over time, I realized that the reason the press secretary was treated this way had nothing to do with who occupied the position, but rather was rooted in distrust of the national media. Neither the president nor most of those in his inner circle of advisors placed any great value on the national media, including the White House press corps. Andy Card once remarked that he viewed the Washington media as just another special interest that the White House had to deal with, much like lobbyists or trade associations. I found the remark stunning and telling. Like many presidents, Bush regarded the press as a necessary evil or nuisance. They were a cadre of intermediaries that stood between him and the American people, often excessively filtering the clear transmission of his messages and, at times, actively working to sabotage his administration and weaken its link to the citizenry. Decades of conservative complaints about the liberal media, going all the way back to Spiro Agnew's diatribes against nattering nabobs of negativism, had reinforced the assumption that the press would never give a Republican president a fair break. In part because of that sentiment, most members of the Bush White House didn't believe in providing the media with much information beyond a bare minimum of data that had been carefully scrubbed to support the president's positions and give the opposition no foothold for criticism. To this day, I'm often asked about the liberal media critique. Is it true? Is the problem with Washington in part a result of the fact that left-wing journalists are in effect at war with conservative politicians and trying to bring them down? My answer is always the same. It's probably true that most reporters, writers, and TV journalists are personally liberal or leftward-leaning and tend to vote Democratic. Polls and surveys of media professionals bear this out. But this tilt to the left has probably become less pronounced in recent years with the ascendancy of a wider variety of news sources, including Fox News, demonstrating the popularity and therefore the commercial viability of conservative views, and more important, everything I've seen, both as a White House press secretary and as a longtime observer of the political scene and the media, suggest that any liberal bias actually has minimal impact on the way the American public is informed. The vast majority of reporters, including those in the White House press corps, are honest, fair-minded, and professional. They try hard to tell all sides of the stories they report and they certainly don't treat information or statements coming from a conservative administration with excessive harshness or exaggerated skepticism. And even when a bit of bias does seep through, I believe the public sees it exactly for what it is. We in the Bush administration had no difficulty in getting our messages out to the American people. If anything, the National Press Corps is probably too deferential to the White House and to the administration in regard to the most important decision facing the nation during my years in Washington, the choice over whether to go to war in Iraq. The collapse of the administration's rationales for war, which became apparent months after our invasion, should never have come as such a surprise. The public should have been made much more aware before the fact of the uncertainties, doubts, and caveats that underlay the intelligence about the regime of Saddam Hussein. The administration did little to convey those nuances to the people. The press should have picked up the slack, but largely failed to do so because their focus was elsewhere, on covering the march to war instead of the necessity of war. In this case, the liberal media didn't live up to its reputation. If it had, the country would have been better served. I'll even go a step further. I'm inclined to believe that a liberal-oriented media in the United States should be viewed as a good thing. When I look back at the last several presidential administrations, the two Bushes, Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter, Gerald Ford, I see a succession of conservative centrist leaders either right of center or just left of center who pursued mainstream policies designed to satisfy the vast bulk of middle-class American voters. All of these presidents were at least moderate on economic policy, generally pro-business in their orientation, and within the mainstream on most other issues, from foreign policy to education to the environment. And the congressional leaders they worked with were, generally speaking, from the same mold, conservative or centrist. Over the past 40 years, there have been no flaming liberals in positions of greatest power in American politics. Under these circumstances, a generally liberal or left-leaning media can serve an important, useful role. It can stand up for the interest of people and causes that get short shrift from conservative or mainstream politicians. Racial and ethnic minorities, women, working people, the poor, the disenfranchised. As the old saying goes, a liberal reporter ought to take up the cause of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable, speaking out on issues that otherwise would be neglected or ignored, exposing wrongdoing, and helping to keep the powerful in government and business honest. Furthermore, I welcome media that are skeptical and untrusting. The more so, the better, as long as they are honest and fair. Those who are in positions of power should have to continually earn the trust of the governed. They should be constantly challenged to prove their policies are right, to prove they can be trusted, and to prove they are accountable. That is the way we are more likely to get to the important, sometimes hard, truths. In today's information-based society, if a media outlet or journalist goes overboard, they will pay the price. I witnessed up close just how that can happen when some within CBS News let their preconceived biases infect their coverage. Most notably, in the scandal over Dan Rather's use of dubious documents to charge Bush with having received special treatment over his National Guard service. The handful of news people who overzealously sought to bring down the president instead brought themselves down. So I don't agree with those who excoriate the liberal media. As long as they do their job professionally, I have no problem with liberal reporters, and I certainly dealt with them happily enough as press secretary. The real problem with the national media is the overemphasis on controversy, the excessive focus on who is winning and who is losing in Washington, and the constant search for something or someone to pick on and attack. These bad habits too often cause the larger truths that matter most to get lost in the mix. Most in the Bush White House, however, do not share my view about the benefit of a liberal-oriented media, and I think the concern about liberal bias helps to explain the tendency of the Bush team to build walls against the media. Unfortunately, the press secretary at times found himself outside those walls as well. Despite all these misgivings, I agreed with the advice from my circle of counselors about accepting the position of press secretary. The president had always been fully accessible and open enough with me, and I felt my relations with the rest of the inner circle were such that I could overcome the extra obstacles placed in front of me doing my job. I believed I could gradually work to remove the few obstacles I felt were particularly unnecessary. If these obstacles had been the only problem I would face on the job, it might have turned out differently. However, by Tuesday, July 15, 2003, the day I assumed my duties as White House press secretary, I was just beginning to realize how difficult it would be to help the president overcome the biggest challenge. reversing the downward trend of his credibility and public standing.